What do you do when all of your friends, family, and internet strangers start asking you for life and career advice? Well, you start a business. Today, I had the pleasure of interviewing Marquise Parker from the Windy City, Chicago, Illinois, about the importance of failure, how to be more memorable, and what to do to make sure when that promotion comes up, you are the first person on the boss's radar. Marquise shares some of his favorite client stories in this awesome interview that you are most certain to enjoy. So sit back and relax as we hear from Marquise Parker.
Hello, everyone. Today, I am extremely excited to welcome Marquise Parker to the show. He is a coach, an advisor, a mentor, and an award-winning career blogger. He is also the Vice President of Strategy for MRI Network, where he promotes revenue and growth initiatives. Marquise embraces his failures as much as his achievements because he sees both as a source of leadership and growth, and his aim is to inspire his clients to reach those goals and to truly believe that whatever they set forth, that they truly can achieve them. And he has taken time out of his very busy day to join us here. So thanks for being on the show, Marquise.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I appreciate you reaching out.
Absolutely. Now, in your own words, if you don't mind, could you tell everyone a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. Currently, as you said, Vice President of Strategy and Business Services for a company called MRI Network. It's a global executive search firm with independently owned offices around the world. And in the role, I'm actually, looking at internal corporate initiatives, but also building a business around services. Previously, I was a former McKinsey consultant, spent 6.5 years at a large global financial services firm that did risk and people solutions, doing strategy and business operations type of work. And way back before business school, I was also a software engineer. So I've got a kind of diverse professional background.
Very nice. And what really inspired you to get into the career and coaching aspect of things?
I sort of fell into it. I had a blog that I started when I was applying to business school back in October of 2003. And through the blog, I just figured the idea at the time was that I didn't know anybody who would apply to business school. And it was tough, not really having people to answer my questions. So I figured that for other people who didn't have someone that they knew going through the B school process, at least they could find my blog and have me. And then I got in to several schools, ended up going to Stanford. And during my 2 years, I told my story through my 2 years at Stanford, the ups and the downs, the highs and the lows. Joined McKinsey after business school, and I had to change the direction. I could no longer tell my story. And so I switched this, like, I maintained the blog to say, to ask people to send me questions, and I'd give them my opinions. And then over time, I found that I just kind of had a knack for answering people's questions, giving advice on things like careers and business education. And people were asking me all kinds of personal things about their lives and asking for help. And so then I started kind of researching and looking into things and realized that coaching is something I just like to do. It's something that kind of plays naturally to my personality.
Awesome, awesome. Now, in your opinion, what would you say are the top two or three skills that someone should work on the most to excel in today's workforce?
First one, relationship building. That's kind of I found that to be part of my secret sauce. And what I've realized is that someone who's super, super, super brilliant will only get so far if that person doesn't also have the ability to build relationships and alliances with people who can help him or her be able to get things done. It's kind of hard to have impact in a vacuum. So you kind of have to break out of that vacuum and connect with people to actually implement and execute on things. Aside from relationship building, I think flexibility. Because once upon a time, there used to be structure to one's career and to the way that just industries and business work, but now there's disruption everywhere. There's innovation, there's technology, there's, in this age, political things going on. There's a lot of things that can shake up your career or shake up your professional environment. So I think that folks have to be flexible to sort of roll with the punches and adjust, so that you don't get knocked off kilter when things sort of shift on you.
Gotcha. Now, when it comes back to relationship building, I mean, people have heard the statement, you're the average of the five people you surround yourself with. Your network is your net worth and those types of things. And how can someone really go out and start growing and building a network that's actually valuable?
Well, I think it's interesting. I've actually been asked this question before. And I think that the best way to do it is to not specifically try to build a network that's valuable. And what I mean by that is that you're able, at least I've found in my experience, I'm able to build much more genuine relationships with people when I'm actually trying to build relationships, not necessarily trying to build a network. And so, I mean, of course, some people would say that they're one and the same, but I think that they come across differently. So I've had people try to specifically network with me because they think that I might be able to help them get ahead, or I might be able to help position them somewhere professionally. And it makes it difficult to really build a trust-based relationships that could turn into a friendship. And my orientation when I'm interacting with people is on the relationship, potential future friendship side first. And if other benefits come with that, like someone puts me in a good position to be on a board or gives me some advice or maybe introduces me to someone, I see that as an ancillary benefit. But I think the primary benefit is building a community of connections and relationships much more than a network. Now, to part of the question where it's like a productive network, I think you do have to be somewhat selective as you're interacting with people, because people, I think, naturally will want to engage. They'll use your time if you let them. And so there are only so many hours in a day, and you can't connect with everyone. So you do have to have be a little bit more discriminating sometimes in who you devote time to. One of my favorite professors in business school gave a piece of advice that I've never forgotten. One of his things in the final session of his class was be ruthless with your time. And that's something that stuck with me since early 06 when I heard it. And it's something that I think about in the back of my mind all the time. So you have to be selective sometimes with the folks that you engage with. Sometimes you have to say no. If someone wants to, reaches out to you randomly and wants to say, hey, can I have a 30-minute call with you to ask you about your company? If you don't have time, it's okay to say no. But I think that sort of thing matters when it comes to kind of building your network. Being open to connecting with new people, but also being willing to say, hey, I've got to put some bounds on it if it makes sense for you.
Gotcha. I love that. Now, not only is it important to open up those lines of communication and when you're growing a network, but also within your career and in your everyday job. So what are some of the ways that you can build relationships within the workplace that can help you?
A few things. So one, I think it starts off with being willing to be an open book. And what I mean there kind of goes two ways, right? So it's being willing to share who you are, the things that matter to you, and open yourself up for people to get to know. But also you have to be ready to read other people's open books. So, it's got to go both ways, right? And I've found that when people try to close themselves in, it makes it difficult to really build relationships that will grow into something longer term. I think you have to sort of have to water the plants. So you can't just meet someone and that be it, and you only interact with those people when you interact with them work-wise. If you're in a work environment where you see your coworkers every day, sometimes it makes sense to stop by a desk and spend a couple of minutes asking about someone's weekend. Or, everybody's got to eat. I have a thing where I like to connect with people over lunch at least once a week. So that's something that I've always done, where it's like, hey, I haven't seen you in a while, Brandon, so let's go get lunch next Wednesday. Put it on the calendar, follow through with it, and do it. So you're actually building connectivity through work, but also building real relationships by getting to know someone. And I think one of the things that I always try to do is offer to be helpful if I can. Now, there may be instances where I can't actually be helpful, but I've found that just by making the offer, that actually sets a good impression to let someone know that I'm not looking at this as a transactional thing. I'm looking at this as something where, it's hopefully mutually beneficial if it can be. But if there is an instance where you might need my help, I want you to know that I'm open to it. Those sorts of things help to lay a good foundation that will allow you to build a relationship over time that can be productive. And that's actually something that I over-optimized over the course of my life and career. I'm still in touch with some folks that I went to college with on a regular basis on professional things or through business school, or people that I've just met at info sessions and friends of friends. I keep a very active set of connections because I do feel that those relationships are a blessing. You kind of have to invest in them to keep them going.
Yep. I think the two biggest things that I think you hit on there, number one, you've got to think of that relationship like a bank. You can't just open the account and start asking and start getting
Things.
You've got to pay into it. You've got to give value first. And don't expect anything because it will pay you back in spades.
Exactly. I'm a big fan of the whole pay it forward thing, right? So even if I do something for you and I never cash that check with you, maybe it will incentivize you to go do something with someone else.
Exactly. And then the second part, which is critical that so many people fail to do, they leave it on the table, and that's follow up. And you talked about it. You mentioned, you know, how important it is to keep those relationships, watering the plants, but people fail to follow up every day.
It's amazing. There have been so many times where I've had, you know, younger folks, you know, a couple of years out of college, maybe right out of college, reach out, and I shift my schedule around to make time, you know, have a good hour-long conversation or go to lunch, and you don't even get as much of a thank you for going to lunch with me. And then all of a sudden you get an email 6 months later when the person needs something, and it's just like, it makes it very hard.
Right.
To get that time again if you can't even get a thank you or a follow-up. Or
it makes that ask so much bigger than if you would have just simply followed up and been friendly and then had the ask to begin with.
Exactly. There recently, I want to say in the last year and a half, I've met a couple of young folks who, you know, kind of reached out randomly, either been introduced or in one case, a guy saw my LinkedIn profile, pinged me and said, look, you don't know me, but I want to do some of the things that you've done. Can we talk? And those guys actively, it's almost like they have a Google reminder or something. They hit me up every couple of months and just say, hey, just want to check in and see how you're doing. And, you know, as you move up in your career, it becomes very difficult to think, to remember to follow up with folks. And I'm terrible at that. But I am always responsive when someone's willing to do it with me. So yeah. That's something that makes it much easier for me as I've gotten older and busier to be able to keep my relationships going with people willing to kind of ping me. And then that can engage in that way.
Yep. And that's something, now that you said that about people following up afterwards, one of our favorite tools we'll share for the listeners as well as for you, it's called Boomerang for Gmail. And so what you can do is schedule an email to go out from now until whenever.
Oh.
So if I'm talking to you, I can write, hey, Marquise, how's everything going? Hopefully it's well. Thanks again for the interview. And that can send out next month or in 3 months, or I can make it, you know, you can write those emails now. And
that's brilliant. That's brilliant.
It makes, you know, you surprise yourself with your follow-up, because then people will, what happens is people will respond to that and you're like, I forgot I sent that email. Oh yeah, I'm supposed to follow up. And so it takes that step out of it for you, and it makes it easier for everyone.
Yep.
Now, so say you're working away at your job, you know, you're smart, you're hardworking, you're a dedicated employee. How can you really start to put yourself in the spotlight so when that next promotion comes up that, you know, you're the guy that they're looking to first, you're the go-to person?
I think first it comes, actually, I just had a conversation like this, not even an hour ago, I swear. Three things. One, you got to execute. You know, it's hard to position yourself to be the go-to person if you aren't executing on your basic stuff. So, you know, going above and beyond in the work that you do, always nailing deadlines, putting thought into your work so that you're not only getting the job done, but you're also anticipating other questions and other pieces of work that may pop up. So when you're seen as someone who can kill it, that makes you someone who might be targeted. I think a second thing is building relationships with people that that have their own connections or their own spheres of influence that matter. So, for example, if I was someone who was looking for someone to help me with coaching people, I might say, hey, there's this guy, Brandon, who knows a lot of people. He's got this YouTube channel. He's pulling together resources to be able to put together good advice. You should talk to him. And so if you are building relationships with people who also have connections and have spheres of influence, that's a great way for people to hear about you and possibly for you to be able to have introductions facilitated. And then the last one, I think it is follow through, whether it's following up, whether it's following through on commitments, like if someone asks you to do something, not only do you want to get it done, but you want to do it well. And then you want to follow up and say, hey, you know, is this what you need? Is there something else that I can help you with? Because that's how you establish that sort of go-to guy status, as someone who can nail it and then is also willing to follow up and actually help out more if possible. That's something that I've tried to do actively throughout my career, because it's that's where opportunities come from. You know, you can go into work every day and kind of punch the clock, or you know, fans of Office Space, you can do your TPS reports, you know, and you just go in every day and that's it. And you will be known by your boss and the people that you see every day, and that's a good thing. But if you're putting in the extra work to expand those connections, to be seen, to be noticed, and then build a reputation as someone who can nail it, that's something where someone may say, hey, Brandon, you've got this set of skills. I'm thinking of building a role out. I would love to talk to you about it. You know, that's helped me out a lot, where many of the roles that I've had are roles that didn't exist before I had them. But someone noticed that I could add some value and said, hey, let me just build this and put you into it. It's a great way to kind of help almost set up your own rotational programs in the employers that you have.
Gotcha. I love that. Now, another tough work conversation that comes up all the time can sometimes be the money or salary negotiation. So if, say you've been working along and, you know, I think I deserve to be paid more than I am. And, you know, studies show that 60 to 80% of companies are willing to have the salary negotiation, but only about 30% of employees ever even bring it up.
Yep.
So really, what's the best and smartest way to try to start that conversation?
That's a tough one. So I'm a big fan of structuring conversations before you have them. So before I kind of came up with that myself, I used to have those conversations and think, well, I feel like I provide X amount of value. I'm not getting valued. I'm going to have this conversation. And if you're not prepared, if you don't have your information, it can come across as, you know, as whining because, you know, Brandon just wants more money. There isn't the fact base there to justify it. So what I've learned over time, if you're ever thinking about having that kind of conversation, first get your fact base that you can use to rely on, so it doesn't become an emotional conversation. It becomes a data-based conversation. Anything that you can find on salary comparisons. So, you know, there are websites that you can figure out how much someone that does job X does earns. And for the job that you have, try to find those good comparison points so that if you make, I'm going to make these numbers up. If you make $55,000 for what you do, and you find that other people in a similar level, in a similar job, in a similar local area make 75, that gives you a comparison point to anchor to. So the first part is your fact base. Second is assessment of performance. So one thing that I've found is that when you're sitting in the seat doing a job, you may think that you're knocking it out of the park, but also your sample size is one. So you may not be properly calibrated. So anything that you can do, again, comparison points, you know, benchmarking about what the level of performance needs to be and where you are compared to that level of performance will be helpful ammunition in that kind of conversation. You know, that way you're not going in blind and saying, hey, I do this, this, and this, and I come to work every day and I work hard, blah, blah, blah. You know, you're supposed to come into work every day and work hard. You know, in the words, to paraphrase Chris Rock, what do you want, a cookie? No, that's what you get. That's your salary. That's what you get your paycheck for. But if you're actually performing above and beyond to a level where you should, you can make a case for being paid more, have those facts and be ready. And the third one is the hardest part. It's kind of like going for the gusto and being willing to deal with the consequences that come from making the ask or have that conversation. You know, if you go to your boss and you make your case and your boss says no, be okay with that because at least you know you will have taken the swing. You can't hit a home run if you don't go up to the plate. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're willing to sit out and on the bench, you're not going to score any runs. You're not going to get any stats. So if you're willing to go into the game, have the conversation, if you strike out, at least you tried. And that could be the motivator that, you know, the kick in the butt that you need to maybe start looking externally. Not advocating that people should leave their jobs if they don't get those raises or anything, but you have to be willing to take that first step forward to even use the data that I talked about earlier. I mean, that's the hardest part. It's a very tough conversation to have. I was talking to one of my mentees about that a couple of days ago, actually, and he wasn't very comfortable having the conversation. But once he did challenge himself to have that conversation with his boss, he found out that the boss is actually in support of the argument that he was making, and they're now going to partner to try and see what they can do about putting him up for promotion. But he would not have known if he'd had that conversation. He would have just stewed and thought about it. But I gave him that same advice. Get your data together. Have your perspective. Non-emotional. It's all about the facts. And then you can anchor that into a good, productive conversation.
I love it. I love it. That's what Gary Vee talks about all the time. Making the most of the at-bats that you have.
Exactly.
Now I know you work with quite a few mentees and coaches and whatnot. Do you have any favorite success stories or favorite light bulb moments of people that you've worked with?
Oh my God. So many. Let me think. There's actually one guy in particular. This guy, he's killed it. So should I use his name or I'll keep him anonymous. And he may actually watch this once I email him and tell him about it. So this is a guy who reached out to me as a reader of my blog, I want to say back in 05, 06 maybe. So it's been like 10 plus years now. And the guy, you know, at the time lived in India, software engineer. So he loved the fact that I had a similar background, and he wanted to go to a top American business school. And I think he was very early in his career, maybe 1 or 2 years out of college. And so he would just ask me these questions, and the way that my format went, someone would send me an email and I would respond and, you know, to the person directly, but also post it on my blog so other people could see it. And so this guy was like a master of follow-up. So, you know, I'd send the email, you know, send an email response to him, and then he, you know, he wouldn't be overbearing. So he would kind of take his time, follow up every so often, asking new questions. And over time, we kind of developed a cadence where I've never met the guy in person, but, you know, I knew that he was trying to take my advice, make it actionable in his own career, and sort of say, okay, Marquise told me that I need to do X, Y, and Z to position myself to learn the sets of skills that I need to put into an MBA application. Let me follow up in a few months and let him know how I did that. So I felt like I wasn't wasting my time in developing the relationship and giving the advice because he was actually using it. And over time he would, you know, we had a couple of Skype calls where we would try to talk live about his MBA application prep process. And over time he actually didn't end up going to business school. But he guided his career in a way where he helped to co-found security. It's like a VPN, secure VPN startup. I was an advisor, you know, official advisor for that organization. Did that a few years ago. Then he joined a private company where they moved him from India. Now he's in London. He's actually building out the business in London for this company. And over the years, you know, since we've been connected, we both got married. I've had a kid. Like when the kid was born, he actually ordered flowers from India and had them sent to my house as a congratulations on my son being born. So even though we've never met in person, it's one of those things where over the years, I've seen that the investment in the relationship has actually helped him tremendously, which has actually made me more bought into his growth and his experience. And the guy is amazing. I mean, just a genuinely nice guy who's actually paying it forward. He, you know, started his own blog and started helping other folks who are kind of in his position. Now that he's technically a technology executive now, because he's moved along in his career. It's one of those things that, like, when you ask the question, he's the first name that popped into my head, because, you know, he had a goal, and I actually didn't get him to the goal that he wanted to do, but he was able to take the information and actually use it to get him to something totally that he probably wouldn't have thought of when I first interacted with him 10 plus years ago. But now he's excited about the work that he's doing. It's
I love it. I think that's one of our favorite parts about coaching as well, is seeing those success stories, seeing those light bulb moments, and knowing that you had an impact on someone's life. There's nothing quite like that feeling.
Yeah. Oh man. It's especially when I see his updates on LinkedIn and on Facebook, and he'll send me emails every now and then. And I'll just realize, like, wow, like this guy is absolutely destroying it. And it's, I don't know. And actually, I would say that my role in it wasn't even that big. It was him putting in the work. you know, you can give someone advice and say, hey, think about X, Y, and Z and all that. When it comes down to it, you've got to be willing to put in the work. And he was willing to put in the work. So I'm so excited for what he's been able to do.
I love it. Now, I know that you've been an inspiration to so many people, like our success story we just talked about. But who do you look to as an inspiration?
Oh, man. My mom. And I know that's very hokey, right? But I think part of it is that I'm from a really small town in Virginia. And the kind of stuff that I wanted to do career-wise growing up, there wasn't anybody around, you know, doing that. There weren't business executives, you know. There weren't people that had gone to business school. Hell, I hadn't even heard of an MBA until 2 years after I graduated college. One of my friends said, hey, you want to do business, you should get an MBA. I say, what's that? But one of the things that that my mom's always done is kind of set that example, right? So she was her parents had 10 kids. She's the second youngest. And she's from an even smaller rural town than I am. And, you know, she was, I think this is right. I think she's the one out of them that went to college right after high school. And so she, you know, got married while in college, had myself and one of my sisters before she graduated, and she still graduated on time, those sorts of things. Her message to me from the time that I was a toddler, kid, you know, kindergartner, was, you know, you're capable of achieving whatever you want. You just got to be willing to work for it. And her thing was always go to college. You know, you're going to go to college. And it's funny, like, sometimes it's just having that one person be willing to say, this is what you should try to do, and you can do it if you work hard and apply yourself. And I know it's real simple, right? It's like basic stuff. That's easier said than done. Particularly when you're trying to do stuff that you've never really seen done before. And a lot of things that I've accomplished in the last 25 years are things that I never knew to even aspire for back then. And a lot of it's just being willing to kind of look at the challenge and take what my mom said, which was, you know, just you can achieve whatever you want as long as you're willing to work for it. You got to believe that you can. And that's been it. So, you know, I had to hit a lot of bullseyes to get to where I am. And you know, my mom set me up to be ready, you know, ready, aim, fire. So I think that she's the one that I would kind of point to.
I like it. It's not hokey at all. You'd be surprised how many people we've interviewed that have correlated back to their parents and family members.
Yeah.
And I like one thing that you've brought up so many times throughout this conversation already is the fact that you've got to do the work and execute. It was this last weekend, we were at a conference and they were echoing this similar statement. And the guy got on stage, he said, I know you've heard about this a lot, but there's really nothing left to say about it. He goes, you drop the pen on the floor. Either you pick it up or you don't.
Yeah.
Move on.
And take that further, right? You can't, you know, you drop that pen. If you don't pick it up, you can't copy down the information of that great contact that you might have met that might lead to your next job, right? So it's like, you know, you meet someone great. The person wants to give you the email address and you don't have a pen because you left it on the ground.
Right.
I love that pen on the ground thing. I'm stealing that. I officially made that up as far as anybody else knows. Because I like it.
I'll give it to you. Now this is a fun one as well. If you could have a conversation with anyone, past, present, future, fact or fiction, who would it be?
Oh my God. It's funny. I've been asked a million questions over the years. That's one that I don't think I've ever been asked. You said past, present or future, fact or fiction.
Correct.
Probably another hokey answer. I would love to sit down and have a conversation with Martin Luther King Jr. You know, it's because, all right, so life, career, everything is all about standing up in the face of challenges, right? And, you know, there have been a lot of people who had to face challenges over the course of life and career and all that. But what that man had to deal with, to lead people to do,
and to move that many people.
Say what?
And to move that many people.
Exactly. Right. Motivate, like this dude motivated the world to fight something that was incredibly wrong in the challenges that he faced himself. I would, man, I would give $1 million to just have a 15-minute session, have a cup of coffee.
And to think, he didn't have trending topics. He didn't have Instagram posts. He didn't have none of it.
Exactly. He was just this preacher down south, like, you know, leading the charge of people and building community, building relationships, building connections, and having impact on people that he never met. They, you know, having impact and getting influencing people to make change when they might have read his words, heard his voice on the radio, saw him on TV. Like, there's a level of influence there. There's a level of just strength that I would love to learn more about, and the enduring impact that you see now, especially given what's going on in this country and the world right now. Yeah, I would love to sit down and have a cup of coffee with that guy.
That would be quite the conversation, I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
Now, do you have any favorite books or book recommendations?
All right, so you're probably looking for like leadership type books.
Anything you've got.
So what? I don't get a chance to read as much as I used to because I have a toddler and I spend a lot of time running around after him. But when I used to, you know, have more time to read for fun, I was a big Stephen King fan. So you know, things like It. You know, everybody knows It, particularly if you're around, if you were a kid in the 80s and you saw the movie It, and it's like, okay, you got to buy the book. So that's one. Once and Future King, like, you know, like the King Arthur story, those sorts of things. And I think and there are business books that I've read over time, and those are good to have too. I bring up those kind of fictional stories mainly because sometimes you just have to escape. Right. And you know, there's TV, there's movies and all that stuff. But they're you know, sometimes it's just fun to be able to say I'm gonna devote a certain amount of time over a period to just escape from everything and put my brain in someone else's, you know, universe.
That's it. I like to read a fiction and a nonfiction at the same time. So depending on my mood, I can go, all right, I want to learn and get into something, or I just want to go off into crazy land. Yeah. And to think of, like, that person who wrote that fiction story. Yeah, it's a made-up story, but they created and built an entire world.
Exactly. Story. Exactly. Oh, and three more that are nonfiction that just popped in my head when you said something. So Freakonomics, Super Freakonomics, and The Outliers. So Levitt for the first two and Gladwell for the third one. Freakonomics and Super Freakonomics, it's probably been 10, you know, 8 to 10 years since I read them. I need to read them again because that was the first time that you hear someone telling a story, and all the story is based on economic analysis that was done, but he tells it in a way that just, it's like a story. And it's, you know, it's nonfiction. It's fact-based, but then you think about the insights, and it's like, oh, makes you look at things very differently. I also laugh because I think it's Freakonomics. There's a chapter about black names, and I always laugh because Marquise is the number 3 black male name listed in there. And I read it during business school. I remember seeing this and being like, oh, interesting. Got to think about that when that appears on the top of a resume, you know? Yeah. So that one, and then Outliers, I want to say I read that a couple of years ago, and man, the stuff that Gladwell hits on.
Oh, it's incredible.
It's groundbreaking stuff. So yeah, I guess those would be my recommendations.
Gotcha. Now, if someone wants to find out a little bit more about you or some of the projects, are there any projects that you're working on currently?
There's work stuff. I'd only be able to, you know, to tell people about that verbally. So I think that's kind of where my head is. I think one of the things that I'm looking into now is ways to get more community involved. I used to be really, really involved with different organizations, and over time, as I got busier, it became harder and harder. So that's something that I need to put. I want to put more time in as I get older. One of the things I put a lot of time into is within the Princeton, that's my undergrad, the Princeton alumni community. The Princeton Prize in Race Relations is the local chair for Chicago. So that's something I put a lot of effort into every year. Other, I guess, ways to find out more about me and the kind of things that I've done and can do. So I have a website, MarquiseParker.com. There's a blog on there. There's background information on me. So I haven't updated it in months, maybe over a year, just because I've been so busy. But for a long time, I was updating that thing multiple times per week. So it kind of tells you the whole story over from the time that I started applying to business school pretty much to now. That's probably the best way. And then I'm also pretty active social media. So like, you know, Instagram, I'm big on chronicling all the stuff that I do, mainly because when I was growing up in my small hometown, you know, there's a lot of things I didn't even imagine that I'd ever be able to do. So now I kind of feel like I have to capture it, and Instagram's great for that. And then, you know, Twitter is basically, I use that to send out my Instagram stuff and any other random musings, and Facebook too. Like I'm big on kind of sharing my story. For the off chance that someone who is basically 11 or 12 year old Marquise somewhere way out in the cut sees my stuff and says, hey, I can do that. Because, you know, I kind of didn't have that back then, but in the age of social media and technology access, we actually have a chance to share our stories with the younger versions of us to help them aspire to the things that we've been able to weave into our own lives.
Gotcha. Awesome. Awesome. Now, final question. Is there anything that you wish I had asked or anything that you wish we covered and didn't?
We've been pretty comprehensive. Actually, one question, that jumps out at me, and it's actually, I consider it to be the most outstanding, important question in all of the MBA application world. It's the question number one on the Stanford MBA application. I think it's question number, it's what matters most to you and why? And it's one of those things where when you answer it, it kind of, there is no right answer because it's based on you as a person, but it also gives a lot of insight into who you are as a person, the things that you care about. That, you know, that's probably it.
So now I'm going to make you answer the question.
I have no problem answering it. And it's funny because I wrote that and, you know, take a lot of introspection when you answer a question like that. And my answer that I wrote back in 2003 when I did is the same today. And it's, for me, it matters most is kind of living the kind of life that will help me leave a legacy and be remembered as a great man, right? So it's just something that's been with me since I was a kid. So I kind of break that down into three areas, right? So one, being a great person, great family man, great confidant. You know, for the people that are in my life, whether it's family, friends, connections, people remembering me and looking back at me and saying, this was a great family man, a great person, a great friend. The second thing, being remembered as a great, you know, professional, business leader, you know, someone that accomplished things, you know, that took the opportunities that were in front of me, made the most of them, and actually tried to do good work and have impact. And then the third piece is someone that had that gave time to give back to the community, you know, kind of leave an impact on the world, whether it's through mentoring, coaching, volunteering my time, being on boards, working with nonprofits, et cetera. So it's kind of those three parts. And it's, when I came up with it, I didn't even realize that the whole, you know, consultants think in threes. I wasn't a consultant back then. But it's one of those things where thinking in threes just helps. And it really is. It's like, you know, you basically, your family, your real life, your professional life, and then giving back to the world. Like, those are the things that for me will make it so that when my funeral happens one day, people actually want to be there and they'll actually be sad that I'm gone.
I love it. I love it. I think that's some fantastic insight. Marquise, you have been a pleasure to chat with. You have dropped some incredible wisdom and knowledge to everyone.
I try. I'm glad I didn't waste your time.
No, not at all. And I'll add descriptions to some of the links into your website and things that we talked about in the bottom. So if people want to get in touch with you and find you, they're able to do so.
Yep.
But once again, I appreciate the time that you took for us today. This was a blast, and I hope to get in touch with you.
All right. Fantastic. Thank you.
And that's all, folks. What'd you think? Let me know the favorite thing that you learned in the comments below. We would love to hear from you. And if you know someone who could use a bit of inspiration, looking for some guidance in their life as well, go ahead and be a pal, share this video with them. You know that sharing is caring. Below, I've included links to Marquise's website, his social media, and ways to get in touch with him. So if there's something we talked about and you'd like to know more about it, where's all the information? Right below in the description box. I've tried to make it as simple as possible. As always, click subscribe right over there in the corner so that you never miss another video. Every Wednesday, we've got even awesomer, more awesome, great, incredible interviews coming to you every Wednesday from the experts, so you don't have to take my word for it. Take it from the experts. Every Wednesday, brand new interviews right here on the Life Secret Sauce YouTube channel that I know you will not want to miss. As always, check us out on the web, lifesecretsauce.com, where you can find out all about our brand new Millennial Magnetism course and how you can unleash your inner awesome in only 10 minutes a day. Until next time, ciao for now.